Hello and welcome to the Nourish Balance Thrive podcast. My name is Christopher Kelly. This week, I am delighted to present to you Nick Pino. Nick is an investigative health journalist specializing in EMFs, that is electromagnetic fields and their effects on human health. His mission is to spread awareness about the potential dangers of wireless technologies and work with industry and governments to find safe solutions. He has recently authored a book called The Non-Tinfoil Guide to EMFs and has developed a training course for health professionals and optimizers on how to dramatically reduce exposure and symptoms related to EMF radiation. In this interview, Nick gives practical advice for mitigating exposure to EMFs without giving up the convenience of electronic devices. He shares some simple adjustments that you can make to keep EMFs from interfering with your sleep and your health, and recommends specific tools and devices for managing, measuring, and blocking unwanted radiation. Be sure to download this episode and put your device in airplane mode as you listen. Thanks for listening. Now over to the interview with Nick Pino. Well, Nick, thank you so much for joining me this morning. I very much appreciate you, and I've very much been appreciating your published book and online training course, as has Tommy. Tommy did a podcast with Dr. Joseph McCullough a few months ago, and I think your work was what inspired Tommy to look into this more closely. So I think we think you're doing some excellent work. So thank you so much for that.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to the discussion for sure.
Can you talk about how you became interested in EMFs? Perhaps first you should define what an EMF is. That, you know, you hear people using that acronym, and I'm not sure that everybody knows what it means. So can you define the acronym and then talk about why you became interested in EMFs?
Sure. So EMF stands for electromagnetic fields. It's a bit of a misnomer in the sense how I use it, how people use it online, because really an EMF is an entire spectrum. There's a lot of things that could be called an EMF or that part of the spectrum, anything from the electricity running in your walls at 50 or 60 hertz, depending on where you live in the world, to nuclear radiation and visible spectrum of light, or the invisible different colors, or infrared or UV light that you can see, is also, all these are EMFs. So it doesn't really make sense. But in the scope of my work, I'm really talking about the new electromagnetic frequencies that we've introduced since the last decades, and let's say 100 years for the electrification of civilization. So this includes electricity in the wall. So these new man-made EMFs and their effects on human health. This is really what I would mean by EMFs. And we know that certain types of EMFs in nature can hurt us. Well, nuclear radiation is found in nature and it can hurt us for sure. X-rays that you get also from space, or gamma rays from space. But also sun radiation can hurt us. It can burn your skin. UV radiation is associated with skin cancer when you get too much, etc. And yet these rays are invisible. So the same thing can be said for your cell phone, for Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and different man-made frequencies that we've introduced and that our ancestors were never really exposed to at these levels. So what got me into it is really the controversy around the science. You have a lot of people that say there's no effect. So your cell phone, you could literally, I read that from a journalist, and I cannot remember what media outlet, but they were really, let's say, you know, very angrily dismissing the issue and said you could tape 20 phones to your face all day and you would literally never have a health effect. I don't think that's a scientific thing to do at all, because there's a lot of uncertainty, but this is how they framed it. On the other end, you've got people and scientists, a lot of credible people, PhD level people that say, no, there's a huge issue. So the answer is probably somewhere in between. And, you know, I've been writing about health, just educating myself. I have a communication background. I have a advertising background as a copywriter. And I was always very interested in, let's say, citizen journalism and really reporting on my findings on diet, nutrition, and different aspects of living a healthy life. And I've been doing that for almost 10 years now. But really, in the last 3 years, I've just dove deep into EMFs because of this polarity in opinion. And once I started reading one book after another on the topic, I realized that, oh my God, there's actually real scientists and not just people who, let's say, do fear-mongering online about EMS that are actually credible and that claim it's a problem. So I hope it's not a problem, but let me go deeper down this rabbit hole and discover for myself if it's a problem or not. And it shocked me to the core because in the end, I realized, wow, okay, I'm going to test these things myself. And I realized that myself, I was getting affected a little bit. My sleep quality was different if the Wi-Fi router was on and I could verify my assumptions. And I felt different around working on Wi-Fi versus not working on Wi-Fi. And then I think what reinforced my idea, even after writing my book, is really talking to practitioners in the functional medicine space and asking them, do you think it's an issue for your patients or your clients? Whether it's those clients that are already athletes like you or people who listen to this and are at a very high level, do you see a difference if they turn off their Wi-Fi at night, remove the cell phone from their bedstand? Do you see them recuperating faster if they don't have a cell phone in the pocket all day? And their answer was yes, yes, for sure. And then when it comes to people who are under chronic conditions, the answer was even more positive from them. Dr. Klinghart, Dr. Dan Pompa, Dr. Zach Bush, who's a triple board certified practitioner, medical doctor, and he has a very, very conventional background studying oncology and doing research on different new chemotherapy approaches. And eventually he just switched his entire direction to like developing Restore and whatnot. But when I asked Zach Bush, do you think EMS can be a problem? And he says, yeah, I see it all day, the sensitivity to these signals. And you have certain individuals that are more sensitive to than others. So this happened really after writing my book. I kind of realized that the problem runs even deeper in the sense that, yes, it might not be recognized on a governmental level or even on a medical level, but functional medicine practitioners, whether they are MDs, naturopathic doctors, osteopaths, or chiropractors, they look at things that work. They do read the science a little bit, right? You want to make sure your approach is based on something sane. But if there is even a hint that something might be a factor, they test it. They test their assumptions, and what they see in their clientele is immediate effects when you reduce these fields. So this is really my direction has only been reinforced towards it's probably affecting us, even though at the moment we don't have the science to quantify how it compares to other, let's say, environmental factors that we're facing.
I'd like for this episode to be a rather practical guide. I think that Tommy and Dr. McCullough use lots of really technical terms like NADPH and peroxynitrite and 8-hydroxy-2-deoxyguanosine and all this mitochondrial stuff. And the mechanisms, they do exist. But I would really like for this episode to be more of a practical guide for people who are interested in learning more about the science and the mechanisms. Are there any real life academics who are doing research in this field that I can refer people to?
Sure. There's a lot of them. I think that Dr. Martin Paul, P-A-L-L, is a great researcher in when it comes to the mechanisms on a cellular level. How can it be that such low level, low exposure, low voltage, non-ionizing radiation can affect the cell? And the answer is not that there's enough energy to break the bonds, the molecular bonds, or else that would be called ionizing radiation. So the entire argument is non-ionizing does nothing. In reality, Dr. Martin Paul's work and also Dr. Paul Heroux, H-E-R-O-U-X from the McGill University here in Montreal, Quebec. He has also explained this, but with another angle, which is changing the water structure around mitochondria and kind of slowing down your energy production or increasing the amount of free radicals that is created. So these two researchers for really the technical aspects to it. But of course, we'll know more in the next 10 years, we'll discover more than the last 50 because these things evolve and the science is getting developed. Other researchers, maybe Dr. Magda Havis from the Trent University in Ontario, but there are several good researchers. Dr. Joel Moskowitz, who's in California in Berkeley, he's really working on the policy level. If you want to know a little bit about what's happening, they're trying to pass more regulations, for example, to have proper labeling, like do not put this cell phone in your pocket, right? So it's kind of the beginning of the tobacco thing. So there are a lot of different good researchers. And in my book, I talk about the work of a lot of them, but there's good science, there's good solid science, and there's debate, right? There's always scientific debate. There's around 250 scientists that have independently published an appeal to the UN in 2015, the EMF scientist appeal. It's not the only appeal that happened. I mean, the Bioinitiative report, there's hundreds of scientists that, yes, they might be renegade, or at least some. The media tried to depict them as, oh, only a few scientists. Well, it's the few scientists that work in EMFs. You don't have a lot of people who want to work in this field, and you don't have a lot of financing. So this is really the state of the science, is that we're learning more and more and more. But there's, if you go on EMF-portal, I think it's .com, I don't want to butcher this, but EMF portal, that's a German website, and it really, if you want to, it's .org. EMF portal is a German-owned website that publishes. They have 28,000 publications on EMFs. So some of it is no effect, some of it is detrimental effect, some of it is positive effect when it comes to, let's say, therapies based on EMFs. But that's a good resource, I think, for people who want to look at the paper themselves.
Yeah, I wonder if some of what is going on here is what Malcolm Kendrick, I recently interviewed Malcolm Kendrick for a second time, and he recently cited Richard Feynman, who said, I would rather have questions that can't be answered than answers that can't be questioned. And I think that's very applicable here with this, the dangers of EMF. And when I talk to engineers, in particular telecoms engineers, they say, well, it's not ionizing radiation. There's no localized heating. Therefore, even though these are new, there's no danger. And anybody that questions that is just bonkers, right? And I wonder whether that's part of the appeal for you as a journalist and an investigator.
Well, for sure. To me, it's just crazy that the industry is not looking into this. I think it's a matter of different expertise. Engineers or even microwave engineers have been taught in their training that this stuff does nothing. The reality is that maybe we used to think that, but dating back from the 70s, the military was publishing the effects of non-ionizing radiation, and they were especially in the East. So this is, well, after the Cold War and everything, I mean, Russian-funded research is not the most popular thing these days in, I think, the second Cold War that we're living through. But the Russians, the Soviet, in the 70s knew about these dangers, and they were reducing the radar operators, the amount of time and power density that they could be exposed to. And when you look at these documents, you have exposures that were making people sick at the time, and these are either workers near military bases or operators. Well, these are similar levels as what we could get exposed to these days with similar technologies, possibly even more biologically active. So when you look into it, you discover that, yeah, it's more like a belief than a fact that these things do nothing. And of course, as long as they maintain this belief, we continue thinking that the protection levels or the EMF guidelines we have, in at least in North America and several other countries, they're protective. So we feel good about ourselves. And we also believe that we can create wireless technologies without any hindrance because we are below these limits. So that's very convenient. And we're in the age with 5G and Internet of Things, and that everyone is focused in the tech space on more and more wireless. So imagine accepting that that the signal can do something. It's going to slow down technological development, or at least it's going to change the way we do things tremendously. So people don't want to look at it, is the bottom line.
Yeah, I can remember that we didn't want to look at it. When I worked as an electronics engineer for a company that made instruments to measure ionizing radiation, so a different type of radiation from what we're talking about now, but still we were subjected to the electromagnetic compatibility directive that came out whilst I was working as an electronics engineer. And so I ended up spending a bunch of time working inside of a Faraday cage testing electric devices for the electromagnetic compatibility. And I had a look on the EU website this morning, and the first page, the first sentence of the first page says, all electric devices or installations influence each other when interconnected or close to each other. Now, in the previous podcast with Mikola and Tommy, Tommy said that human biology is about moving charged particles around, right? So could you consider a human to be an electric device or installation? And how can these other things like not be having an effect? Like, I don't know what that effect is or whether it's necessarily bad, but there must be an effect. So to say, oh, well, there's no localized heating or no double-strand bonds being broken through ionizing radiation, it's kind of a bit of a stretch to brush me off with that.
And, you know, this view that the human is a bioelectrical device is both, like, meat and electricity is still fairly new. So this is not recognized, and most people are not looking at these potential effects. But of course, we know that the heart works electrically, our mitochondria works electrically, there's such thing as the charge in the cell membrane. I mean, so many aspects need to be considered in how these EMFs that we create could impact the EMFs in our body. But this is not how the standards have been done, this is not how the industry thinks, and this is not how medical science thinks or the medical mainstream. So they don't think about these things. And when they do, I have several engineers that I know, one of which is Pavel Wypichowski. I interviewed him on my YouTube channel, and he's an electrical engineer. He has designed antennas for the military and secret services in Poland. So he has a huge background where he understands the technology, but also he understands biology. And he also suffered from these exposures because he has been tremendously overexposed in his career. And he says, well, now I'm working on It's electromagnetic biocompatibility. So the new science of, okay, now let's say that, okay, heat is one thing, but what are the other interactions that could happen? And he's working on the fundamentals right now, and he's launching a Patreon blog. So engineers, I think they want to do good in the world. I don't think there's... Some people put evil in these things. I think it's easy to do that, to fall into like us versus them. Oh, the tech industry is trying to do something, or there's evil at play. Maybe there is. I'm not sure of that. What I see is engineers trying to create magical things. And once they see that it's a problem, I think that we put our minds together, we're going to create low EMF technologies, eventually extremely low EMF technology, and maybe even a technology that can be compatible with human biology. But it's a question of time, and it's a question of putting our minds there. But of course, the first step to getting there is recognizing the problem.
Yeah, well, part of what piqued my interest was my interview with Cal Newport, where Cal talked about the possible harms of social media and the solitude deficiency, shall we call it, you know, where you're constantly connected to some device and the notifications are coming thick and fast. And this might be detracting from people's ability to do deep work. And I think he's really onto something. And I think that that should be part of this cost-benefit analysis. Okay, so we're introducing this new technology. Like, what are the benefits? What are the costs? And I think that Cal's work should be counted in. Okay, so not just the biology of the electromagnetic fields themselves, but then also at the application level, what is being delivered by these new frequencies? Because I'm not sure that it's always good, right?
You're totally right. My angle, and you know, this is really, I started off at someone looking at the EMF problem. My book is about the problem, also solutions. We're going to get into this because you want this interview to be practical. Don't want to forget our angle here. But at the same time, now my work is turning a little bit more as I want to call myself and position myself as an advocate for safe technologies. What does this mean? Well, it means that the tech giants have been creating technology because it looks cool and because they know, unfortunately, this is kind of the same thing as what we did with food when they've developed Oreos or these very addictive sugar-laden foods, is we know that users will be attracted to this. In other words, we know they're going to be addicted. And even worse than that on an ethics standpoint is we know children are going to be addicted. And they hire the best psychologists. I mean, and if I wanted to increase my bottom line as a tech company, this is what I would do. I would create a product that's irresistible. But the downside of that, after, let's say, 10, it's been 12 years since the advent of the iPhone, we realize that society is now addicted to these devices. And some people in the tech space, a lot of them are saying, well, that's not what I had envisioned. Yeah, we want to create great products. We want to create the iPhone and these machines. But now they're starting to disconnect society or to cause postural problems because people have the tech neck, or people have sleep problems, not necessarily because of the EMFs, that doesn't help, but because of the blue light, or because people have notifications at night. Useless notifications about now, well, you have a newsletter from Gap or from Amazon.com that tells you product recommendations at 3 a.m. and people wake up. So it's really our use of technology, I think, has been unabated so far. And we need to go back to the drawing board. And this is what some people in the tech space have been doing. And I'm glad that I'm seeing that, because my next step is trying to work with them, you know, and say, yes, EMFs is a problem. You don't want to look at it. Let's look at it together. But also other things. Screen time itself, I think, is detrimental. If you spend your entire life on a blue lit screen, hunched over, I don't think it's compatible with what we want the population to be at when it comes to health and also to rationality and to being part of the democratic process. I don't think it's healthy technology that we've developed, because the main criteria to develop it has been profit and just making it irresistible.
Right. So we just need to optimize for new metrics other than financial gain, right?
And exactly.
You know, investors and shareholders are humans too, and they have children. And so I'm hoping that the message will spread. But tell us about what's coming. So I wondered what you might know about the fifth generation of mobile telephony and what good, if any, will come of it.
Again, there's some good, there's some bad. But the good news, I guess, is some technological developments can be exciting. Self-driving cars, we can reduce pollution on the roads. We can maybe not even own a car. I mean, I'm following technologists such as Peter Diamandis and other technologists that are predicting the future in the next 10 years. And some of this stuff is very exciting to me. I read about it. I'm interested. The problem, again, is how fast this is being developed. I think this is being developed way faster than our ability to understand the consequences on a biological standpoint of these new EMFs. And also, when it comes to privacy and to the ability of these things to be hacked. So internet security is also another angle that I'm not an expert about. I've got a friend who works in internet security, and I know he doesn't use any Google products anymore and doesn't use Facebook. And, you know, to me, he sounds a little bit over the top, but probably if I knew what he knows, that everything is unsecure, and it's probably a mess also when it comes to how these things can be hacked. So 5G is the fifth generation of wireless signals, and it's really an entire new infrastructure that they want to install everywhere that's already been launched to 30 plus US cities. The difference is multiple fold. It's a new iteration of the technology, but it requires small cell antennas. So instead of, for example, in Montreal, the announcement was made that instead of having, what's the number again? I think we're going to have 50 times more antennas compared to what we had for the fourth generation 4G. So it's really antenna densification, because you're going to install an antenna every 3 to 12 homes in residential areas and pretty much every block, if not multiple antennas every block in downtown areas. And why is that? It's because they use millimeter waves in the mix of frequencies, and these frequencies go higher. It's the same frequencies pretty much that are used by the airport scanners that a lot of people prefer to avoid. Well, it's going to be stronger than that. So imagine the 5G technology is more beamformed, and this is really what's going to enable them to send data at a lightning speed. So you could download a 4K movie in a few seconds or a few minutes. So it's not comparable to old technologies. It will be way faster and more exciting. And it's really about bandwidth, mainly for people to watch streaming videos, which is the main demand right now for more bandwidth. So it's highly directional, but also it makes it so that people are going to be more exposed to, let's say, the unavoidable exposure of EMFs. So, of course, if we think EMFs do nothing, nothing to look at. If we think they do something, then it's a matter on a societal standpoint, well, you can avoid your own cell phone, but what can you do about an antenna being installed close to your bedroom? In a situation where you multiply the number of antennas by many fold in Montreal, chances are I'll be exposed to an antenna that, if it does something to me, maybe I have no saying over. And the regulations are really pro telecoms right now in North America. They're protected against health effects, and you cannot really argue that a cell antenna should be moved over health effects, or you get a sue, or it's really pro industry right now, the situation. So 5G, I think it's a lot of people are waking up to the fact that they're going to have antennas in front of their home. And what's funny in a very twisted way is that most people are exposed more by their own cell phone than the tower. But everyone wants a cell phone and they're addicted to it, but they don't want a tower. But the only way the cell phone works is if they have the tower. So I want the tower, but not in front of my home. in front of this guy's home. And then the other guy says, no, not in front of my home. So where do we put the towers, right? So it's bizarre because people have not recognized that their own cell phone is a problem. They put it in their pocket all day. They sleep with it. But then the tower is a huge issue, right? And it's true that the tower is unavoidable exposures. The 5G towers will only be activated, from what I could gather from a building biology document, when users are near. So in other words, the 5G tower will be idle, and that's good. I'm glad they did that, if that's what they're going to do. So it keeps idle if you don't have a 5G phone connected nearby, which probably won't happen because everyone will be on their 5G phone. But if it's in front of your home and only your neighbor uses it, it's going to kind of point towards your neighbor. But on top of the 5G antenna, there's going to be also 4G and LTE antenna. So other previous generations that are going to be backups, and these are always on. So it's a complicated matter, but in the end, 5G, what it means for people is more exposure. Very simply put, is more exposure, again, for profit and for better connectivity. What's the stop to this madness? If you recognize that there are health effects to EMFs, what's the stop here? In I think it's Finland, they had a meeting a few months back about 6G. And 6G, they're thinking, right, 6G doesn't officially exist, except that Trump tweeted about it. We want 5G, 6G, and then the industry kind of went crazy because they're like, oh, we got to work on it now because Trump wants to push it. But what's happening is that these engineers are meeting because, of course, 6G is going to be, okay, well, maybe in 20 years, but maybe in 10. And how are we going to be ahead of the curve, be the first country to do it, or be the highest paid engineers or tech companies, how to really tackle this opportunity? But again, there's no one looking at health effects in this team of engineers. If there were, they would think that the technology otherwise. And you know, I've mentioned autonomous vehicles and other technologies. It turns out that other wireless technologies such as infrared lengths, wavelengths, or other iterations of these EMFs or different technologies could be used to make it happen. But the message right now from the industry is we need 5G to make it happen. And that's probably more of a marketing PR message, from what I could gather, than real facts. And there are telecom experts that say it's all smokes and mirrors. They're selling to the public that we need 5G. In the end, it's more something imposed on the public to have people replace their phone every year. There's a lot of subtopics we could go into, but I want to get into practical aspects.
Of course. I was going to ask you whether you thought that the precautionary principle would apply. So whether potential for harm is catastrophic, right? So Tommy cited some rodent studies in the last episode where after four or five generations, all of the males are sterile and the potential benefits are marginal at best, right? Possibly even deleterious for the reasons that Cal Newport discussed on a previous episode. So should therefore the precautionary principle apply? That is, don't do it unless you can show that it's safe.
This is the question. Some scientists would say, well, the precautionary principle has not been applied. It's too late for that, right?
Okay.
Because it's not been applied for 2G, it's not been applied for 3G, for 4G, for LTE, and then for 5G.
Good point.
5G is being rolled out without one single biological study to study, let's say, how cells or rats or something else reacts to this set of frequencies, this mix of frequencies, this particular type of signal that's going to be sent out. So we're really flying blind, is how Senator, I think it was Blumenthal, in front of, it was in a congressional hearing, he was really grilling the industry about that. And he said, well, where are the studies, right? You tell us it's safe. And in the end, they said, there's no study. And he said, okay, well, conclusion, we're flying blind. So we don't know. We're going to know eventually. Epidemiology is going to tell us that in 3 years. And we're going to say,
well, will it though? I mean, Tommy talked about that as well. Maybe. Where's the control group? You need a control group, right? For epidemiology to work.
We're going to get, that's another question. Of course, it's going to be complicated to decipher what was from 4G, from 5G. So it gets more and more complicated. And the more we roll this out without safety testing first, I think the more we're going to have bad surprises and confusion on a scientific standpoint. Very hard to pinpoint the culprit and to roll back to what used to be a population that was healthier. And we're just seeing, right? And this entire debate about EMFs needs to be understood in a society where half children have chronic disease. It's important because if everyone was healthy, I would probably not be pursuing EMFs. But in my mind, we have to recognize that we have a critical problem. If everyone is sick and we don't know why, and we're trying to just treat them, we're going to treat them when they're sick. Why are they getting sick in the first place? And some people would say, oh, it's GMOs, it's pesticides, it's lack of exercise, it's nutrient deficiencies. And EMFs, though, I found it's really a missing factor in the equation. That's for sure something that changed tremendously in the last 50 years, especially the last 20, especially the last 10, and especially the last 5, because it is constantly increasing. So for sure, we don't need another factor disrupting biology, because people are getting sick already because of multiple factors in our society. And we don't need this financial and emotional and human burden on our mind anymore. I mean, it's already pretty bad what's happening. So for sure, we should adopt something, the precautionary principle, which states that, yeah, of course, it could be a disaster because these things are rolled out to an entire population. So we should at least do some testing beforehand. But unfortunately, that's not how the regulators think, and the regulators want to sell this 5G spectrum. They have a lot of interest to roll this faster and faster. And I'm talking about the FCC here in the States. But yeah, it's really the race to 5G is more important than being cautious, right? And of course, this entire mindset is, of course, very based on the false premise that EMFs are perfectly safe. So you feel good about yourself if everything is perfectly safe and you just roll out another technology that's a better iteration than the last one. But if the 4G was very concerning and you roll out 5G, then you're in a very bad spot. And it's definitely not something that should be rolled out right now. You know, in Belgium, that's in the Brussels region, the Minister of Environment said, my citizens will not be guinea pigs. I mean, she's a politician. It's not something that we would hear in North America or someone maybe who wants to commit career or political suicide. But she said that. She said, well, 5G is brand new. There's not one study. So logically, we're not going to roll it out. For the moment, this is what's happening. And we'll see if political pressure and financial pressure will get the best out of them anyway. But other people think differently in other sides of the planet is what I'm getting at.
Okay, well, I promised people a practical guide. And as you just alluded to there, we should really give that to people. Yeah, so I guess my first question is, where does this fit in on the grand scheme of things? So recently, our performance psychologist, Simon Marshall, talked about the SEEDS framework, which I think is just fantastic. It's a very memorable acronym and also a metaphor. But SEEDS is sleep, exercise, eating, drinking, stress management, right? Those are the pillars of good health. And I don't think that's very controversial, right? Like, maybe you would disagree with drinking. I'm not sure. It's probably an individual thing. But where do EMFs fit in with the pillars of good health? Like, I'm not exactly sure where I put that in. So my question for you is, where does this fit in the grand scheme of things?
Sure. So EMFs, imagine first thing I would argue sleep. And there's not enough studies, unfortunately, to prove that, oh yeah, a cell phone next to the pillow does lead in a reduction of 22% of deep sleep or REM or any of that data. What I can tell you is there are studies about EMFs and melatonin. There are some researchers looking at, okay, well, how exactly does cell phone radiation impact the sleep? It might be a change in brain waves. Your brain is trying to have this entire schedule and these sleep cycles, and then everything is a little bit more blurry, and the transition between different states aren't as smooth, or maybe it literally just wakes you up when it shouldn't. So what I can tell you is that almost 100% of people I've talked to in the last 3 years, whether they feel sensitive or not, whether they're athletes or someone who knows they're sensitive to EMFs, it makes a difference turning off the cell phone at night. So, and removing any wireless device from near their bedstand. So the first step would be that, because if you're an athlete, you perform at a high level, and you could add 5% to your sleep quality, probably you could increase your, I don't know, reduce your race time by a few seconds. Like these, I think this is minutia that is really worth it, especially because it's just a single click. You just hit airplane mode. So I think there's a low hanging fruit for those. When it comes to people who suffer from chronic disease, it's even more important than they sleep properly. Their entire body is kind of going through a marathon every hour. They're really, really, and their recuperation ability is next to none because they're under all this stress, whether they're recovering from cancer or just have autoimmunity or overall everything is going wrong with their body. They need to repair. Dr. Klinghardt, for example, who's a pioneer in the treatment of chronic disease, for him, it's critical that EMFs are addressed as a first line of defense when he sees people. Because if he applies everything that he knows, it has been learning in his 40 year of medical experience, if the patient fails to comply with removing Wi-Fi at night, removing the cell phone, and removing these sources, then he doesn't see it working that much. It's counteracting what he's trying to do because, yes, you might take a supplement, you might do this and that, but if you don't sleep, you still feel drunk in the morning or you still get pre-diabetic because of your blood sugar that's all over the place, right? We know how much bad sleep can harm us. So sleep is really the key. So if you look at your bedroom and you wouldn't put chemicals, and there are some people who have a very healthy beds and they look at all aspects of their sleep, adding EMFs in is very simple and is very important. In my opinion, in the opinion also of people who do EMF mitigation at home, these EMF surveys, professionals, building biologists, you have geovital consultants, another class of professionals called shielded healing in the United States from my friend Brian Hoyer. So these professionals, what they do is they come in your home and they help you clean the bedroom first, because once they clean the bedroom, they see the biggest results. If you can sleep 50% better, your health's going to transform. Of course, people feel completely different. They can think clearly. And we know that the magic of repair happens during the sleep. The second thing I would say on your framework, the SEEDS framework, is stress. A lot of people are experiencing, well, of course, stress talking on a cell phone because just of the topic or the person they're talking to, or the fact that they have to be on 24/7. But there's also
I'm more worried about the connection part, right? So Cal Newport made this distinction between the hard analog communication and the sort of soft digital connection, you know, like, so it's like one bit of information that communicates with another human, right? The like or the heart button or whatever it is like not a substitute for the hard analog conversation. So I'm less worried about people talking on the phone than I am them trying to communicate using WhatsApp, right?
Exactly. And if it's not that, it's kind of numbing your brain because you're always scrolling to an endless. And now it looks like every news outlet now, when you finish something, is just infinite. The websites are like infinite
scroll.
You become a robot. So there's one aspect of it. I think it's stress, adding to your stress, whether it's like getting nonstop bad news or notifications. But also there are studies about EEG changes or HRV changes in people that clearly show that a lot of people have a stress response, if not everyone, have a stress response to cell phone signals or Wi-Fi and whatnot. So it's increasing. I think that it's part of the mix of what's increasing your stress response and putting you in really this sympathetic fight or flight response that a lot of people are constantly on. Okay. And when you add traffic and caffeine and worry and credit cards that are going to explode, you have the perfect mix for someone who never gets out of this state, even at night, and you don't get recovery, right? So I think it's a huge part of this. Another aspect that I would say for athletes is really the effect of cell phone on sperm and possibly on testosterone production, which is really, I think, an aspect that needs to be elucidated more in research. But we do know that sperm count or quality or motility is affected by cell phones. And it's so established, you know, that the head of the top fertility guy at the Cleveland Clinic is saying, you should probably not put a phone in your pocket. So there are comfortable saying that now because of the overwhelming proof in the last 20 years that putting a cell phone in your pocket will probably lead to a reduction in sperm quality. And we know that the sperm count levels and all aspects of sperm health have been declining so fast in our society. It's probably part of the reason, and probably along with certain chemicals and other stress factors. But I know, I mean, I've been to the Onnit gym in Austin, Texas. I've seen like these high-level athletes. I was looking left and right, and I saw just like supermodels and NFL players, and all of them had a cell phone in their pocket, right? They train with the cell phone. The cell phone was glued to them. They were texting with the trainer. And so the new generation of athletes is always on these devices. And I'm wondering if they could even get an extra edge if they stop being exposed to those things. Or, I mean, you pre-download your music, you pre-download your podcast, and then you use your cell phone just the same way, except you put it in airplane mode. That's what I do. When I work out or when I go for a walk, I just use my cell phone differently, and I make sure that everything is pre-downloaded. So that's a choice. It's really a choice to make and a different way you want to use your technology in the end.
So if there was a Pareto principle here, if there was the 80% of the benefit from 20% of the stuff, then it probably would be related to cell phone usage. Put the damn thing in airplane mode, keep it away from your body. Certainly I've seen Tommy do that. He doesn't keep a cell phone in his pocket, and he's talked about it explicitly. I certainly don't do that. I'm lucky enough to live somewhere where there is no cell phone coverage, and that's not a safety thing. That's a population density thing, right? There's just not enough people here for it to be worth while putting cell coverage where I live. So if I don't leave my phone in airplane mode, then it's just going to zap the battery in no time whatsoever as it looks for a cell, right? So I leave mine in airplane mode all the time. What else? So talk about Bluetooth. I'm really interested in Bluetooth. It's so damn convenient. It can be so annoying as well. I sometimes wonder about how many hours of human life have been wasted with people messing around with Bluetooth devices not connected.
You're trying
properly
to connect your device and all of a sudden you hear a conversation from another phone. I don't know.
Oh my God, I've never had that. Usually it just won't connect. No. But when it works, it's like so beautifully convenient. You know, if I can just get into my car and the podcast just keeps on playing on the speakers in the car rather than in my headphones, that's awesome, right? Like, I love that. But is there a downside to Bluetooth?
The power levels of Bluetooth are generally lower than a cell phone. However, if you have, let's say, the Apple earbuds that are Bluetooth now or any other competitor, I mean, it's not too bash on Apple. Every company in their right mind now sells Bluetooth because the Bluetooth-enabled headphones, because that's what people want, right? So it's deeper in your ear. So the actual exposure to your brain is probably comparable to a cell phone, except that maybe a lot of people don't talk on a cell phone that much these days. They text or they scroll and they rarely have long phone calls, but they will likely have hours and hours on the Bluetooth-enabled headphones, and that's very common. So it's really the cumulative exposure that you get from Bluetooth devices. So if you can help it, for sure, I would recommend to avoid Bluetooth, and it means go back to the wired stuff, and it's not as convenient. This is something I talk about in my book, and some people, let's say, that are more extreme told me, Nick, you're not ethical. I was using a wireless keyboard and a wireless mouse writing a book about EMF. But then I said, right, that's kind of ironic, but at the same time, I was writing it, and I'm like, well, I don't know what this stuff does on my body. I had a real curiosity. And since then, I realized that I changed these devices. Like, I realized that change takes time because I did, okay, I sold the keyboard and I got rid of the mouse. I got something wired. And eventually, it is a hard hit to take for people. Well, I just purchased these headphones, Nick, for $500. You're telling me I'm going to, like, it's kind of, if my message would be get rid of everything, a lot of people would disconnect. So I prefer being a little bit more, I think,
intentional
on a human standpoint, you know, tactical about it. Like, do baby steps. So if you have Bluetooth devices and you're planning to replace your headphones, consider something wired. And same thing for any technology that you replace, because at the moment, I do not believe that a single wireless device we can really call safe, because again, the industry and the standards have nothing to do with really how these things affect us on a biological standpoint. So it's very hard to quantify, but what scientists say is really the cumulative exposure matters, just like when it comes to x-rays. We know that the risks of having adverse effects or future cancer risks from x-rays, well, they accumulate. So if you have one x-ray, it's not the same thing as having 100 and 101. So we're trying to minimize exposure to x-rays only when the benefits outweigh the risks. And I think the same framework can be used for EMFs. It's okay, well, maybe I use these Bluetooth earbuds for now, but at least I'm going to do these other things. And then it's like cleaning up a diet. I think it's the same thing. If you want to go extreme, you can. If you And probably there are benefits to going extreme when it comes to EMFs. A lot of people are, shielded homes, living in the middle of the woods. If you have no cell phone signal, this is you're in an extreme low EMF detox compared to other people.
I've met a local woman that the reason she's here in Bonnie Doon is because she experienced electromagnetic sensitivity.
There you go.
And it's the only place you could find where she could live.
So, but it's a matter of cumulative exposure. So I think if you're hypersensitive, I would have different advice. If you're hypersensitive, it's kind of being someone with celiac disease who's eating bread only on the weekends.
Right.
Sometimes it just doesn't work, right? Uh-huh. It keeps you asymptomatic, and you have to find your sweet spot and see if you can stay healthy even if you live in LA. Right? Some people cannot. And if you have a hypersensitivity, we don't know exactly how it's caused. It's probably a storm of different conditions and inflammatory conditions that make the body overreact to a single cell phone, and the person cannot operate anymore. These are really extreme symptoms that I had even a friend go through, and unfortunately she passed away from the symptoms at a very young age. But she had a slew of things, but one thing was sure, even living in the middle of the wood was not enough for her, because there was cell phone towers. She didn't have zero coverage, you know, so it wasn't a zero EMF zone. So for some people, they are so sick. And unfortunately, again, some people listening to this conversation will say, well, I thought that we had proven that electro hypersensitivity is not a thing. It's all in the head. Well, don't conclude that too. Like, the study design of these is pretty shaky. If you read Professor Darius Lysinski blog, he's a scientist and has been working on EMFs for decades, really identifies that in the end, we didn't even know in the first place if these individuals who had the sham exposure versus a real cell phone were indeed electrosensitive. So maybe it was more like we don't screen for real electrosensitivity. And how could we have done that? Well, it's through blood markers and different markers in urine that have been identified by some other researchers. So we could do better studies on electrosensitivity, and I don't believe it's all in the head. And the evidence coming from functional medicine practitioners that tell me, yeah, in my patients, is day and night. First, we identify that they feel sick. Then we identify that they feel sick at a certain point or a certain physical location in their home, and it happens to be in front of their computer. Okay, then we stop exposing them to Wi-Fi, and then they heal. So it's not a placebo effect. It's not a nocebo effect. It's more like, okay, we find something that really ails them. And this comes back to me over and over and over. And I cannot believe that it's all in the head. For some people, it might be. But overall, it looks like a lot of people are being affected with different symptoms right now, but don't recognize them. So, and I guess my point, because I'm digressing a little bit, but whether you feel it or not, whether you are in the middle of the woods and feeling sickened, or you're in a city in LA feeling great, on top of your game, I'm an athlete, it's probably better that you reduce exposure, just like it's better if you avoid x-rays as much as possible, unless medically necessary. So reducing your overall load is just for everyone, I think, just like it's for everyone to eat real food, right? Maybe you can handle McDonald's if you're an athlete.
Especially if you've got all your other pillars dialed, right?
Well, exactly. Maybe you can handle it, but I don't think life is about seeing how much you can handle. For sure, you can have occasional things, but that's not the debate. But if you can handle McDonald's all day, probably it doesn't mean you should do it, because eventually it's going to hack away at all the efforts you're doing for your health.
Yeah, I think you raised an important point there with the compounded exposure. And you're reminding me, I watched a BBC documentary on the plane back from London recently, and they had a university professor from Brunel, I believe, that was showing the toxicology of some pesticide. They didn't say Roundup. I'm pretty sure that's what it was. And I think I might even know the studies that they're talking about, where they're required to show the safety of the individual ingredients, but really it's the compounded effect of all of them that led to infertility in rodents, at least. And this doesn't lend itself very well to the types of clinical trials that we do today. And probably the same is true here with your EMS, right? Like, okay, so I just expose you to this one thing, but really it's the compounded effect that's causing it the problem. And so you need to think about all of your exposure. So we talked about the cell phone, we talked about Bluetooth, which is potentially something you can avoid. So in my situation, it's really easy. Like, there's a USB lead right there. I could plug my phone in. I just can't be bothered. It's just easier just to throw my phone onto the seat and just let the Bluetooth play the podcast in the car. What else should we be worried about? I wonder about grounding with my computer in particular. They seem not to like the third earth pin in the US, and I can actually feel it. You know, sometimes I'm like, where's the earth for this? And, you know, I can feel the tingling. I've got a MacBook Pro from 4 or 5 years ago, and I can actually feel it tingling through the trackpad sometimes. And they're like, oh, I'm the earth. I get it, right?
So, yeah.
I wonder whether that should be of concern, and that people should be going to extra lengths to make sure they're using that third pin, because it is an option in the US.
I would always use it, because of course the electricity runs through your body. I've had a lot of people tell me that when I told them, well, just use the extension on your MacBook kind of charger where you have the third prong, and they felt, oh my God, I actually feel less fatigue at the end of the workday in front of my computer, because they feel the tingly sensation. I was in Thailand. They have I think it's 250 volts, but I don't know what their electrical grid is.
Oh, it's way worse in the UK. Yeah, if you manage to figure out how to plug a two-prong connector into a three-prong socket in the UK, especially when the computer is charging, you can really feel a strong current.
Yeah, I was buzzing. I'm like, oh, wow. I'm not sure that's natural or that should happen.
I'm not sure it's how it's supposed to be used either.
No, exactly. The entire case is metal, you know, so it does conduct. And if you want to go to further lengths, you could even use an external keyboard that's USB. I do that because I have a stand in front of me for my laptop, or else I always develop neck problems. And I'm working with a chiro, and my entire spine was like the T3, T4. It was horrible. And the C3, anyway, like the text neck, I had everything basically. And always pain in my right trap, you know. So I use that for posture, and I use what's called a Roost, R-O-O-S-T stand. And that's an adjustable stand for your laptop. And then I use an external keyboard. And this setup helps you two-prong, right? It's postural, but also you don't get exposed to these fields directly on your computer. And also, you create distance from your computer. So if you're on Wi-Fi, which I don't use at home, at least, I use it sometimes in rare occasions and in airports and whatnot, but at home, I'm on Ethernet cable, which of course I recommend. But if you're on Wi-Fi, every inch that you distance yourself from the computer is better, because the exposure will drop exponentially with distance. So that's very important. If you can create distance with your computer, with any device, if you use a cell phone, some people use it like this, right next to their body. Well, if you can have the habit to create a bit of distance, it's better. It's not perfect, but it's way better. Same thing for an iPad. Same thing for anything that's wireless that you hold in your hands. And something I need to mention also is just Wi-Fi at home. You don't need Wi-Fi. You can have Wi-Fi if that's your choice. A lot of people are aware of EMFs try to walk their talk, and myself included. I have killed Wi-Fi at home, and I have an Ethernet cable running all over the place. Eventually, it's going to make it its way into the walls, but we get a higher kind of work guy for that. We're going to do it, but it's super stable, and you get exposed to zero. So that's, of course, the best option. People who have a Wi-Fi router, I want you to do a few things. First, it needs to be turned off at night. You don't need it. And even if you see 100 Wi-Fis from neighbors, yours is most likely to affect you if it's closer to your body. So it's a matter of distance. And even if it's it's just in the other room. Well, if you have coverage right here in this room, in your bedroom, do you think you're not exposed? Yes, coverage is radiation. It's the Wi-Fi coming here and being able to go through certain materials. So you want to turn it off at night, and then you want to also turn it off when not in use. And that's not a habit that's easy to develop, but it can be done. If you overall use the Wi-Fi 1 hour per day, open the Wi-Fi when you need it and keep it closed. So it's the opposite of how most people use technology these days. Is most people, it's always on, and sometimes they turn it off. Like, oh, I'm going to turn off my cell phone because I want to have dinner and be quiet and not have notifications. Instead, always off. My cell phone is always on airplane mode. And when I need it for Uber, for something else, I open it for 5 seconds and I'm done. So it's really switching around how you use it. And your Wi-Fi router is going to survive just fine. I know there's a lady who emailed me a few years back. Nick, can I turn my Wi-Fi router and will it open back? Like, will it break it, basically? Will I lose the internet when I open it back? And I found that funny, but some people think, because technology is always on, that maybe they're going to break something just turning off the Wi-Fi router. It's going to be just fine, even though the tech guy might not like it.
It's funny you mentioned, Matt, because my dad said the same thing. And I think what he was saying was grounded in some truth. Probably somebody in the UK knows more about this, because I think it is a UK thing. I think it might be an ADSL thing, you know, where they're trying to run internet over existing copper lines. And if you keep turning off the router, it's going to think that there's a problem. And so it's going to back off on the connection speeds. And so I'm pretty sure my dad read that in a magazine somewhere, like a consumer magazine, like that you shouldn't turn it off. But I don't know whether that's true. And I certainly I don't know if it's true over a fiber or coax connection.
Yeah, well, hopefully you won't get into trouble for turning off your Wi-Fi. I still think that it's a good idea to do it. And if you can help it, there's also a third thing you could do with Wi-Fi, is really to reduce the power of your connection. A lot of people have now these Wi-Fi routers, like 3 or 5 antennas that can literally give coverage to the entire neighborhood. And you don't need that. Like, of course, you're going to have great coverage if you have a large home and maybe you're in the basement. But there's a price to that, which is tremendous exposure at home in the entire household. So if you don't need that and you need just good enough connection, you can put your router inside. There's different products that are, let's say, miniature Faraday cages. So they're just a metal, basically metal sheet that's pierced with little holes. And you put your Wi-Fi router in there. One of them is called a wave cage from lessemf.com. And it will basically just silence a little bit, right? You will still have a connection, but maybe 90 to 99% less powerful, but then the speed and coverage will reduce. But a lot of people find that, oh, well, it's good enough for me. And if I need the extra connectivity, let's say, oh, no, I need to download something real quick. You open the thing and that's it. Now, oh, it's like the turbo button on old computers. Maybe you have seen those because you've been around. But
yeah, you're showing your age now, Nick.
yeah, exactly. I'm like, oh, my God, this is the first reference that I do that shows I'm in my 30s.
Okay, so we talked about cell phone usage. We talked about Bluetooth. We talked about Wi-Fi and perhaps Ethernet wiring. We talked about grounding for the computer. What would be the next level? Do you recommend, you know, I've heard lots of people talk about purchasing a meter. I do like the idea of that because it makes the invisible visible and it gives me important feedback on how I'm doing, right? That's something that's often missing from health and performance is sometimes I never find out how I'm doing, right? You drop dead of a heart attack. That's your first symptom of cardiovascular disease. That's not good, right? Like, I want to find out that I'm not doing the right thing before I drop dead of it. And so the meter seems to me like a really good way of getting that rapid feedback. But is that a step too far? Is that a ticket to crazy town? Like, would you recommend people purchase their own meter?
I know that a lot of people who are getting into EMS purchase a meter, and I think it helps tremendously. I think the most annoying thing is not knowing if a certain machine emits these EMFs or not. That's so annoying. When you have your computer connected this way or that way, or my phone on airplane mode, but then I open Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, you don't know exactly, because if you don't feel it, well, you're just left to guess. And that's pretty annoying. You could discover with a meter that a lot of machines that you thought were not emitting anything are still emitting because they're looking for a device. A good example, I was in a hotel room, and the moment, well, of course, the EMF guy, I enter the room, I put all my meters on the bed, I'm like, okay, let's get started. And I kind of did a little video of that in Austin, Texas, and I found a cordless phone, so that was the base station, the charging station was emitting a lot, unplug it, and I see the levels drop. Okay, cool. And then I went around with my meter, I'm like, oh my God, right next to the pillow, what is that disrupting my sleep? I wasn't happy. And it turns out it was an alarm clock, but that had the capability to be Bluetooth. And even if it was not connected to my phone, it was looking for something to connect to. And it was literally every second, bing, 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 bing. And again, I would have the equivalent of having my phone on at night. So my own phone is on airplane mode, and I know I need to tackle this. But with this meter, I was able to find, oh, there's this other source. And you know, there's a lot of sources at home that could also be a culprit. There's the baby monitors, which I recommend putting as far away from children and using it very sparingly, which I've been doing just when we go away in vacation or to the grandparents' home that's larger. But I put it 12 feet away from children.
Sorry to interrupt you. I've never understood baby monitors. Like, why the fuck would you leave your child in it, like, where you wouldn't hit? We've got two kids and we've never had one. And, like, I just can't. I mean, they cry. Like, I mean, you just leave the door open, right? Like, you hear them.
Yeah. Well, it was on, let's say, a huge debate with my wife. And I ended up saying, okay, yeah, we're gonna get it. But here's how we're going to use it. And some parents put it in the crib. This is not even manufacturers say you shouldn't do that for choking hazards and whatnot. So put it the other side of the room and you will still technically hear it. You can test it, of course, to make sure you don't want your children to cry for hours and not know they're there. I have a 15-month-old, so I know what the feeling is like. But yeah, using sparingly, and if you can have other techniques, like I'm going to check on the kid every 15 minutes, well, it's better. Because again, it's just another source that we use.
Right.
It's a little bit of convenience for possibly a lot of exposure. So there's that, the cordless phones, and then there's all the sensors that we put inside our homes. A lot of people, if you have a smart home and you listen to that, you probably want to tune out or else you're going to get frustrated with me. But you install all these devices at home, every Bluetooth thermostat, every Bluetooth light that some people can control everything electronic in their home, including their dishwasher and start their toast while they're driving or anything, right? You can control everything. But there's a cost to that. There's wireless connectivity, and most of these sensors, again, they connect 24/7. So having a meter, it helps you identify these sources. Then you can have more advanced meters that help you quantify these sources. Like, okay, this one emits 1 unit of radiation. This one is 1,000, so I'm going to eliminate the 1,000 one because, of course, it's the biggest priority. It gets a little bit technical, and then you have to invest a few $100 more. And in those cases, if you're not very interested in kind of learning this stuff for yourself, I recommend having an EMF professional come to your home. And for a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of doctors that I know, Dr. Ben Lynch, Dr. Mercola, a lot of them have had these professionals come in their home, and they said, oh, wow, it was incredible because my sleep has improved tremendously after applying what was found. We reduce exposure. This is really how you reduce exposure from various sources that you're really with a little meter, a beginner level meter. And I can tell you the brand is called Enviro RD10. Dennis 10, and on the site radmeters.com is the one I recommend because it's $140. So it's the most affordable meter that's just good enough for beginners in my mind. But let's say if you're in the middle of the room, in your bedroom, there's nothing that could be a source. And you see on this meter, the red zone, what does it mean? Well, it might be a cell phone tower. And if it's a cell phone tower, how do you protect yourself against it? You cannot turn it off, right? So in these cases, if you have a professional come at your home, they could recommend EMF blocking curtains. They could recommend EMF shielded paint. And these are more advanced solutions. But if you want to stay in the same home, but you want to improve your sleep, you need these advanced solutions. Or if you suffer from this hypersensitivity. So in these cases, I would go to either a building biologist, geovital consultants. You can each Google that profession and you'll find probably a practitioner or a consultant around your area. They're all around the world. In North America, there's a lot of them. And a third one was shieldedhealing.com, Brian Hoyer. I think they're doing a great job. Then they're building a team that basically roams around the US. So this is really what I would do. I would grab a simple meter, is super useful. But at one point, if you don't want to become an engineer in this stuff, hire a professional. They will come out to your home. It's going to take a few hours. And then you'll have a good portrait. You're going to know, for example, does your neighbor expose you to EMFs a lot? Maybe they have the Wi-Fi router under your bed, right? In the other room.
Right.
You never know what the situation is. And with a simple meter, you wouldn't be able to tell that much what direction it comes from and how to quantify these things. It's a profession in itself. So I would hire someone and then have the ease of mind that comes with it, or the fear that comes with it. If you realize, oh my God, there's always something you can do to some extent.
It's
fixable.
That's
the good news. You can shield yourself and you can shield a home. It's just a matter of budget. So maybe you'll choose to move. Maybe you'll choose to apply something. And maybe you just need to turn off certain devices that you're the one pays for and you're the one who put inside your home. It's just like chemicals. Like when you learn about cleaning products that might be detrimental or leaching or contributing to bad air in your home, you look under your cabinet and you're like, oops, I paid probably $200 for all these things and they're kind of slowly hacking away
the oven cleaner.
So, but once you know better, you do better. So it's really, I think, the order of operation here. You start with a few things that we've said about cell phones, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and you go from there. You go to, okay, a meter is a little bit more advanced. If you want to go there, I do recommend it. A lot of people who are, let's say, self-proclaimed health geeks or athletes or biohackers or health practitioners want to go there. They want to know the numbers. And then, of course, you can travel with it, right? So if you go to a hotel room, you can know, just like I did, and that's on my YouTube channel, the video where I ended up finding there was a Wi-Fi router under the bed, literally. Yeah, and that's just ridiculous. I could unplug it, and then my night of sleep was okay, because it's Austin and the levels from outside were tremendous. And then the third step is you go to a professional and really to assess your EMF environment.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think that's a great place to wrap up. Just one quick question about that meter that you mentioned. There's many different types of fields, and there's four that you mentioned specifically in your book, The Non-Tinfoil Hat Guide. Would a meter like the one you just mentioned, would that detect all four types of field?
It looks at three different types of fields, and that's radio frequency, which is, the most talked about EMFs these days, so cell phones and Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. You have magnetic fields that could indicate that there's a wiring problem in the home, or maybe you're very, very close to a high-voltage power line, or even just conventional voltage power line that is too close. And these emit a field that just stays there. And if you live in it, maybe you have a problem. Unfortunately, these fields are very hard to shield against. And I get into that a little bit in the book. But the third type is electrical field. So they do look at the three types. And it will assess. The goal of this meter isn't to assess really and to quantify very precisely, but is to find and identify problems. When it comes to magnetic fields, for example, you could find that if you sleep right next to your charging phone, there will be on top of the radio frequency. Well, if it's on airplane mode and you say, oh, there's no EMFs anymore, well, there's an electrical field and there's also magnetic fields. So in other words, you're also getting zapped wirelessly by the fact that your phone has electricity in it, but it's not contained inside the phone. It irradiates from the phone. So if you charge your phone at night, even though it's an airplane mode, I would charge it a few feet away from your head, actually. And that's something a lot of people do at night because it's on their bedstand, but charge it on the floor, for example, like 3 feet away. Again, these are steps that are going to help you reduce your exposure.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. Well, let's help people remember what we told them. So you talked about mobile phone usage and you talked about airplane mode and not keeping the phone on your person. And you certainly don't want it in your bedroom at night. And you don't even want to charge it in your room, right? You want it out the room completely. You talked about turning Wi-Fi off at night. You talked about using Bluetooth and Wi-Fi deliberately, right? So we're not saying cast out all of these technologies, they're no good. We're just saying be very mindful and deliberate and intentional about their usage. We talked about grounding your computer using the MacBook extension lead, and I'm sure other computers have equivalents where you're properly grounded rather than using you, a human, as the ground. And then what else did you talk about? You talked about
the Wi-Fi router, so making sure it's off at night for sure. If you want to automate that, you can have it on a Christmas light timer. Or even when it's not in use, right?
Right.
So Christmas light timer is something super practical for families, and a lot of people love this advice. My top advice would be to just remove the Wi-Fi and have an Ethernet cable. That's a personal choice. A lot of people end up doing it and they feel better. And then it's also identifying the different other devices that are wireless in your home, anything Bluetooth, the cordless phone, base stations, and try to reduce your use of that. A lot of them can be replaced. The cordless phones can be replaced with good old analog wired phones, and that cost like $10. So they can be replaced, not as convenient. You get to trade convenience for a little bit less of the bad stuff. And the same thing as diet. Going to McDonald's is convenient. It's right there.
Right.
It's drive-thru.
That's a trade-off.
But if preparing your meal is long and tedious and you're going to think about it, well, but you have the benefits. So the same applies here.
Right. Okay. That's been really helpful. Thank you so much, Nick. So for users like me, you may enjoy the Non-Tinfoil Hat Guide to EMFs. It's a fantastic resource and online book that you can purchase. And then I guess also like me, for practitioners, people interested in diving into this a bit more, you've got the Electrosmog RX. Did I get that right? An online course?
That's correct, yeah. ElectrosmogRx.com. That's our professional level course. I teamed up with Dr. Klinghart and also multiple international collaborators, and we tried to put together what is the best medical science on how to teach this stuff to your clients or patients. And a lot of people also take the course for themselves because they're just interested in, let's say, elevated content. There's about 4 to 6 hours on EMF science alone. So it's a good summary. It's by no means, let's say, a review of everything EMF related. Just the science, I think, could take 100 hours. It's crazy rich, but it's a good summary of the issue, so the problem and the solutions. And let's say it's the version of my book that really goes to another step in understanding and in sophistication.
Well, thank you so much. I very much appreciate you both for recording this interview with me and for being brave enough to create these resources. And the fact that I think that you were brave tells me that maybe there's a problem. But nevertheless, I'm very grateful to you. And I will, of course, link to everything that you mentioned. Elaine does an amazing job of scouring the internet to find all of the references for everything you mentioned in this podcast. And they'll be available over at nourishbalancethrive.com/podcast. Or if you poke around inside of your podcast app, you'll surely find the show notes for this episode. Is there anything else that you would like to link to in the show notes for this episode, Nick?
Just my new website that's coming up before the end of the year. But right now I have just a website where there's all my resources, my links to Facebook and YouTube and whatnot. It's just theemfguy.com.
That's excellent. Thank you so much, Nick. I very much appreciate you.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.